little bit too much now. I am Betsy Rosenberg, and I am thrilled about today's show. What a lineup we have. First up, we're going to be speaking with David Jenkins. He is Vice President for Government and Political Affairs for Republicans for Environmental Protection. First off, we're going to get some reaction to that news from the League of Conservation Voters about this being the most hostile Republican Congress to our environment and public health and safety ever, I believe. And joining me for that conversation will be our good friend D.R. Tucker, my favorite Republican climate convert. After that, we're going to be speaking with one of the most preeminent environmentalists in Israel. Alon Tal is in California, and we're going to be catching up on some wisdom and some projects going on in Israel. He's with Ben-Gurion University, and they are in the forefront of clean technology in Israel, so stay tuned for that. And last but not least, going to be speaking with a woman who just came to my attention. She is an activist fighting leaf blowers, and just because I happened to have been in the wake of a leaf blower around my house a few weeks ago and felt like I was under assault and my dog was hiding under the couch, I decided this is a timely issue I've not yet talked about, her efforts to get leaf blowers, if not outlawed, then at least regulated. They are a real a public nuisance and a health nuisance, and probably not good for our environment as well, I'm sure. So stay tuned for this edition of The Green Front. I am now pleased to welcome to the program for the first time, I believe, David Jenkins of Republicans for Environmental Progress and D.R. Tucker. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks.
So it must be interesting times, David Jenkins, to be leading Republicans for Environmental Progress. And one of the things I hope we can do in this interview is really make a distinction between Republicans who are true conservatives on conservation and the extreme ideologues, you know, in the right wing end of the party that are really distorting reality, ignoring science, and causing a lot of heartache for those of us who are working hard, and I'm sure that's you among us, to raise awareness about the very, you know, urgent and many environmental challenges we face, beginning with climate change.
Yes. Well, you know, this year has been, or this past year has been particularly tough, especially when you talk about the House on the Republican side. There's been a lot of really bad legislation tossed out there. And, you know, the thing that always troubles us is that if you poll Republican rank-and-file voters, you know, most of them are very good on these issues. You'll see things like fuel economy standards supported by, you know, 71% of Republicans and, you know, those kind of numbers. And yet we don't see that ethic of responsible stewardship reflected in some of the folks we send to Washington. And why we can't take that silent majority of Republicans and somehow persuade these folks to do better. That's the question of the day.
And I guess it's a sort of a worse example of what's happening just across the country, where most American citizens, when polled, are concerned about the environment, are in favor of clean technology, renewable energy, and yet it's not being reflected in Washington. Why do you think overall there is this disconnect, and especially in the Republican Party?
I think too much it's really caught up in partisan politics. It seems like there's a real corrosive atmosphere on Capitol Hill. It's like a view that in order to somehow be doing your job as a loyal Republican, you have to adopt a position that's 180 degrees from, say, the Democrats or President Obama or whoever. And, you know, the thing is good policy may not be 180 degrees from these guys. Good policy may be 10 degrees or 20 degrees or 90 degrees from these guys. And so you've got to look at things from a standpoint of what makes the best policy. If you don't like the president's solution to an environmental problem, don't just deny the problem. You need to come up with your own solution, and it needs to be a real solution that really is aimed at getting at the problem. Most of our great solutions to big environmental problems have come from Republicans. If you look at cap and trade, which has been so demonized recently, it's a Republican ideal that came out of the Reagan administration, and it worked marvelously to reduce the threat of acid rain. It was a market-friendly approach. But, you know, Republicans are not getting credit for that because the ones today want to revise history and claim that cap and trade is some kind of Democrat conspiracy.
They also want to revise science, especially those who are running for the White House. I'd love to hear your impressions of Mitt Romney's flip-flop on climate change, for lack of a better term, and also Newt Gingrich's deciding that he's going to drop Catherine Hayhoe's chapter in his book. She was on the show last week. And John Huntsman was the only one who, quote, believed in climate change, and he was one of the first to go. Could be a connection there. You know, what's up with that? I mean, it's the green elephant in the room. It's the one thing that's just not being discussed in any of the Republican debates.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing among the Republican candidates, at least the ones that are left standing, they're really catering to a very small segment of the Republican Party. This kind of Rush Limbaugh listener, extreme libertarian segment of the party is really only about 19 or 20% of registered Republicans. And yet, because they make so much noise, because they have these vehicles in, on radio and Fox News, their views are amplified. And it's disproportionate to where Republican voters really are. And so what you've seen this primary cycle is that the candidates really seem to be trying to contort themselves into appealing to this small group of folks. The problem comes in, you know, whoever wins has to figure out how to appeal to a broader segment of voters. And since most voters, Republican, Independent, and Democrat, have you know, good conservative stewardship ethics, it's going to be really hard for that person to then jettison all the baggage they've created in the primary and broaden their appeal and have a sensible environmental policy.
David, you mentioned Fox News a moment ago, and I want to bring that up as one of the drivers of this denial. And it's very interesting that you mentioned that right after a study by Drexel University pointing out the role that media coverage of climate change plays in sort of driving public opinion on the issue. And we've had email exchanges before, and I've expressed my view that I'm very, very cynical about the Republican Party's ability to sort of walk back its denial. And I think one of the reasons why is that Fox News and Roger Ailes are now the de facto leaders of the Republican Party and the larger conservative movement. And so long as they continue to push an agenda of deny climate change and stay on coal and oil, I just do not see how it's possible for the Republicans to sort of make a clean break from this era of just basically denying scientific facts.
Well, I think it can. It would probably require a bit of a problem in November, and then you know people can eventually wake up to the fact that they've been led down a pretty treacherous road by trying to cater to those news outlets and so forth, because, you know, like I said, your average Republican voters, you know, are in a good place on this. The other problem with this, though, it goes beyond just the right-wing libertarian-type talk radio. It's also the mainstream media, in that somehow they feel like if they're too far, you know, on the side of established science, that somehow they're not being balanced. And so This talk radio phenomenon and this Fox News phenomenon has also served to pull mainstream media to more of, when they're trying to apparently be even-handed, you know, they're actually giving more credence to some of the skeptic arguments than really you know, is valid and should be done.
That's right.
So they're culpable as well, and so it's a broader media problem than just the right wing.
Absolutely, and while 95% of all talk radio shows are conservative, there's not one. There's some liberal shows on, but there's not one, you know, dedicated green talk show. And DR and I are trying to change that, and that might have some bearing on why more Americans are not as concerned about climate change as they should be. People consume media. Media plays an influence, and the ones on the right wing, extreme right wing end of this, are very, you know, if not, I'll give them credit for this, they're very forceful, they're very dramatic, they're very passionate, they're dead wrong in my view, and how they think they know more than 98% of the world's climate scientists is to me the height of arrogance and surreality, actually, and dangerous in terms of, you know, holding back progress on dangerous planetary climate change, not to mention, you know, other environmental challenges.
Yeah, and more importantly, they're actually not being conservative. I mean, they portray themselves as conservative. They they wrap themselves in Ronald Reagan, when actually they're not really trying to live up to Reagan's legacy like he did with the Montreal Protocol. They're trying to remake him in their own image. They're you know, waste is not conservative, not looking out for the interest of future generations is not conservative, ignoring responsible stewardship is not conservative, letting corporations off the hook for not being responsible with their own pollution, that's not responsible, ignoring health effects with mercury and so forth and the impact that has on issues of life, that's not conservative. So you can just go down a whole list, and you can see these people, they're libertarians, they're radicals, and they're, you know, the very essence of conservatism is the opposite of radicalism. So you cannot be a conservative and be a radical, and you cannot be a conservative and not be concerned about future generations and really pro-conservation.
And they have, you know, a lock on media, because I've tried to get my show, been doing, you know, environmental radio for 15 years, you know, very qualified, and I've gone to all the syndicators and said, hey, how about one show that actually reports on the science of climate change and challenges Rush Limbaugh and company, you know, when they're spewing garbage? And they said, well, we'd like to put you on, but there's no friendly environment there. We've got 8-9 hours of conservative programming. So they really have, you know, locked it up. And I think if more Americans were aware of that, most people are shocked to learn that, A, 95% of all talk radio is ultra-conservative, and also that there's not one program dedicated to our environment in this country at a time when, you know, the planet is in peril. I try to mention that each and every show because, you know, that's important for people to understand what we're up against, and not surprising that we're losing this battle, and we are. And I love what you said about, I'm going to quote from one of your blogs here, any restraint on material appetites, even efficiency measures that make a dollar go further, is the enemy of a political ideology that places a premium on material gain and immediate gratification. This is not conservatism. There is nothing conservative about waste and gluttony. Exactly right. It's all about, you know, private enterprise and individual success. And public be damned. Future generations, go to hell. Pardon my bluntness, but that's really what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was a sort of a paraphrase of something well-known conservative, Russell Kirk, who used to write for the National Review, had said about, you know, about conservatism. And I would say that, you know, it would be helpful if the media, since most Americans consider themselves conservative in general, and the you know, how most people, if you read the definition of conservative, think of conservative, labeling the Rush Limbaughs of the world as conservative actually gives them a label that works to their benefit. I mean, they should be called out for being radicals and libertarian radicals, almost in the vein of Ron Paul and that kind of thing. And people that are really beholden to special interest, they shouldn't be graced with the label conservative, because they're really not. What I like to say is, you know, if you look at the hippie movement back in the 1960s, where the motto was, if it feels good, do it. And they had all these vices, you know, they wanted, you know, do whatever we want to, and we don't really care about the downstream consequences. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what Rush Limbaugh is preaching. That's exactly what Sean Hannity is preaching. They're basically saying, I want to do what I want, and I don't care about the consequences. The vices are different, except maybe not in Rush's case, but the vices are different generally. But the philosophy is the same. And if you can look at the hippie movement in the 60s and say there was nothing conservative about that, there's no way you can honestly look at talk radio today and say that it's conservative.
David, one of the frightening things about this dynamic on the right is the attempt, and I hate to say it, a fairly successful attempt to sort of write Russell Kirk out of the conservative movement, to sort of basically rewrite history and to declare that all of his arguments that he made about the need for some sort of order in society and the need not to make materialism and consumerism the highest aim of life, all of that has been basically forced out of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, to where if you talk to younger conservatives, they think Russell Kirk is a movie star, not one of the philosophers in the history of conservatism. I've mentioned before, you know, how many fake friends I've lost as a result of my own reconsideration of this issue, and one of the few friends I still speak to When I bring up Russell Kirk, he basically has made it clear that he can't stand Russell Kirk because he sees Russell Kirk as the anti-Ayn Rand, and obviously it's his view that the Randian vision is what should dominate the conservative movement now as opposed to the Kirkian vision. And it's just horrifying because it's literally conservatives breaking faith with their own history. How can a movement not know its own history?
Yeah, the whole Ayn Rand thing is pretty frightening. I've never, obviously, that's never been a part of the conservative tradition. I mean, you've got Edmund Burke, you've got John Weaver, I mean, not John Weaver, Richard Weaver, Russell Kirk, William Buckley, and then, you know, everybody from Barry Goldwater to Ronald Reagan on political side of things. You look at the rhetoric of all those conservatives and look at some of the things they did and some of the things they advocated for. And they were being true to conservatism. They're the ones who gave conservatism intellectual respectability. And to have all that sort of, you know, trashed now, and really it's because the Republican Party is being driven by some folks who are really not conservatives, they're libertarians. And there's a big difference. Conservatives believe that you have a responsibility to society and that government is an instrument of helping make sure that people live up to those responsibilities. Obviously, you don't want to go overboard in that. And so throughout history in the United States, typically the libertarian influences in the Republican Party and the traditional conservative influences in the Republican Party have kind of kept each other in check. One pulling toward freedom and liberty, and one pulling toward order and responsibility. And those were that's a nice counterbalancing effect. Of course, when you get the liberty folks running off and running the other people off the road and taking control of the train, to mix metaphors, we've got a very different situation. And I would love it if more people would understand that this is not conservatism, and really go back to their parents taught them and everything about being responsible and being good stewards and so forth, and let that guide them, not the rhetoric that they hear on talk radio.
Okay, I have just a couple of quick questions before we are running out of time, but it's so wonderful to have you on. We'll have to have you back, David. Two things. One, do you think there's going to be a backlash because of this extremism, if nothing else, you know, the climate change denial that's going to hurt the Republican candidate, because we know whoever it is, Newt or Mitt, probably Mitt, they're, you know, saying they don't believe that we even have a problem. And especially when scientists are saying we have just a couple years left to turn this around or, you know, it's game over, to quote NASA's Dr. James Hansen. We cannot afford to have someone leading this country who doesn't want to even face reality. That's question number one. And then one last one after that.
Okay. I'll take that one real quick first. Yes, I think it will hurt them. I think, you know, it'll hurt them more if the nominee doesn't wrap this up relatively quickly and actually have an ability to pivot their message a little bit. Although, in some cases, they've boxed themselves in pretty good, and the pivot's going to be a tough one. But if this goes all the way down to the convention, you're talking August or whatever. If you're playing to the conservatives all the way through the libertarian extreme fringe of the party all the way to the convention, you have a very short period of time, and it makes it very impossible to pivot and to broaden your appeal for independent voters.
Okay.
And I see a scenario where not only do we lose the White House, but I think the House of Representatives could flip.
Pretty dramatic statement. And one last question. Do you see yourself as a Republican first or an environmentalist first?
Certainly, I don't know if I'd say environmentalist just because of the way it sometimes comes across, but I'm a steward first, and I'm a conservative steward. And I'm convinced that stewardship is such a core part of conservatism that I will, continue to speak out and try to push the Republican Party in a better direction. But being identified with political party above being an American is part of what's wrong with this country. So we're certainly not going to make that mistake.
Thanks so much, David Jenkins and D.R. Tucker. Appreciate both of you being with us. We'll be back right after these messages with Alon Tal, one of the top environmentalists from Israel.
I'm a denier. The world's not on fire. It's just a lie.